Welcome, Carmen. I'm so happy to host you this week in Tallinn. Aitäh kõikile meid juurustamast. We just actually finished a meeting with a group of people that will be making happen the first group curatorial visit to Estonia in October. And Carmen will shortly talk more about it, but I'll just tell who she is and where she's coming from. Carmen is originally from Buenos Aires, and she studied in Bard College in New York to become a curator.
Columbia.
Yeah. And she, what's interesting about her career is that she started out doing the curatorial research for all the public institutions, and then jumped to the market side and started running a couple fairs, among them also Untitled in Miami, which is one of the more visually and conceptually better fairs in Miami during Art Basel. And since this spring, she started a nonprofit called Curatorial Research, Curatorial Program for Research, or shortly CPR, and in essence it is a platform, international platform, for curators to go to different cities, different countries, and do an immersive 7-day program to get to know the local art scene, meet the local professionals, do studio visits, and take this knowledge back and work it into an exhibition, project, screening, or anything that they wish. So Carmen will tell in more detail about all her projects and also this new platform called CPR that Estonia will be the first host country already this October. So please enjoy and please welcome
Thank
Carmen.
Hello everyone, and thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure to be in Tallinn. I'm eager to go and visit studios and know more about the art scene here. So, as Karin mentioned, I started this curatorial program for research project that it's encompassing all continents, but we're going to start here in Estonia little by little. It's a research program where curators will go to different cities to get an in-depth knowledge of what's happening there. And Karin asked me to present this program and also to do a little bit of a presentation about Buenos Aires and what's going on there. So I'll try to do that as fast as possible. So, well, this curatorial program, as we said, is an intensive program, and the idea is to, for 2017, to have 6 programs a year where curators spend about a month in 4 different cities. So by 2017, our objective is to have 60 curators participate per year, which means that if we do all the math, it's going to be about 500 studio visits per year. And right now, our network has grown exponentially. We started with this idea in between January and February, and we have curators that are hosts, like Karin here, in cities in South America and Buenos Aires, in Santiago de Chile, in Sao Paulo, Brazil, then in Mexico we have in Baja California, in Puerto Rico, Miami, and Indianapolis, and New York, that's the Americas. And then in Europe we have in Lisbon, in Madrid, Brussels, and Prague, here in Tallinn, and we have somebody also in Helsinki / Stockholm. She's actually my business partner, Aura Sekula. She's also a co-founder of CPR. So why are we doing this? The curator, curators are sort of a new profession. I mean, it's something that has been going on for quite some time, but usually when I tell people outside of the art world that I'm a curator, they're like, you are doing what? They don't know exactly what it is. I mean, we know what a curator is, but at the same time, it's a profession that it's developing a lot. For example, I consider myself a curator, but at the same time, I curated one show that actually happened. And my career path has moved from different places that I am sometimes a producer, sometimes a director. But when I have to fill out the form, I put curator, so it's easier for everybody. So usually, curators are interpreters, translators, people who understand diverse cultural strategies. But in order to do that, we have to go to all these different places. And usually people that come from middle upper classes can do that. And the objective of our program is to democratize that that issue and make available the knowledge of local places to people from any kind of economic background, but with great ideas. So that would be the main objective. And also, this knowledge, we want this to be spread without the need of going to the main cities of New York and London, without the need of an interpretation from those centers. Even though, yes, I studied in New York, Karin also lives in New York, and most people do stop there. The idea is to begin to create these bridges that were once there between the diverse cities. It's also going to include an academic curriculum, so curators, when they come here, it's not going to be just studio visits, but actually readings that they have to do ahead of time in order to understand the culture and the arts in depth. As I said, it's going to be fully funded to the participants, and the other objectives are the professional development, so when they come back, they have a strength that they didn't have before. And they have a critical analysis that it's different because they have already talked to the artists. They are not just seeing them on pictures, which is what mostly happens. And they are going to see the actual works, and they are going to have also an immediate result, because part of the program, as part of the program, we ask them to send us a proposal for a show, and we're going to give them funds to one of them to actually produce a show with at least one artist that they have seen in each city that they have visited. As I said before, for 2017, the objective is to have a lot of curators in the program. We're aiming at being one of the key programs for curatorial research. So the first year, we're very lucky to be doing it here in October. We're going to do also Helsinki, and it's going to be up to 10 curators this time. But we're going to be growing, as I said, towards the final shape, towards 2017. What else can I tell you about the program? So it's going to be an open call. Anybody can apply. Our profile is going to be mostly emerging curators, but it doesn't have to be also only for emerging curators. It could be a curator that has done some work and is interested in deepening his or her knowledge in Estonian art or Finnish art, and they have not had the chance to visit, and they have not had the chance to talk to artists. So that's also the profile that we're looking at having. And then these curators will have the chance also to create bridges between themselves. We did one pilot program last year in Brussels, and what happened is that we all stayed connected. We all are in dialogue. So there's a potential of a growing network after the program. We were 8 curators visiting studios, artist studios and institutions in Brussels, and 90% of those curators are part of the program today. So there's a potential of networking that goes beyond what we are planning actually. So that's more or less about CPR. We discussed so much before this presentation that I think I'm repeating myself. But So the second part of the presentation, I'm gonna talk a little bit about Argentina, what's going on there. This is like the other end of the world. We are in the bottom, far away from anything. But we have this attitude that we think that we are in the center of the world, but it's like once you start moving around, you realize that you are really far away. So I think it's also very important that we create these networks, because it opens the minds of the people from different places and dislocates you and puts you in this like global environment. So long time ago, in the 40s, I'm gonna try to give you a little bit of background of what happened in Argentina. Joaquin Torres Garcia, who's from a neighboring country, Uruguay, start thinking about the idea of inverting the continent, because everything was dictated by then from Paris and it was moving towards New York. And he saw this thing of the center moving in the north with, and skipping whatever was happening in Latin America. So part of that is part of that spirit is the way we think in South America, that even though we are logistically and I mean geographically really far away, we do think of Buenos Aires as a center. I have to give I have been outside of the country for 15 years, so it's the perspective that I have is a little bit influenced by living abroad, of course. So in order to understand what happened in Argentina and in Latin America, when one studies the history of Latin America, there's like decades that are key to our history. So the 40s are the years that people usually study in Argentina. When you take Latin American Art 101, it's 40s in Argentina, 50s in Venezuela, and 60s in Brazil. So the highlight of our history is the movement called MADI. It's M-A-D-I. And it arose from the exchange that Argentine artists had with constructivism and with Mondrian and the Stitch movement, and how they, some of the artists were able to come to Europe, but most of them were learning everything out of books and pictures. And they thought that the next movement that had to happen was something about breaking the frames of the pictures. So there we have Rod Rothfuss, which was his artistic name. That's not his, obviously not a very Hispanic name. And there we have Julia Cosice, who also is not his real name. His family was from Cosice, so that's why he changed it. And you see that these are very like advanced artworks, because they were not just painting, but they were trying, I mean, they broke the frame and they started playing with the frame, and they were using neon lighting and movable sculptures and movable paintings that they were hanging on the walls. Carmelo Underqueen was the other part of the, another person who integrated this movement. So they were basically, I mean, changing whatever was happening in our history. But what happened here is that no one knew about this until people started doing research, Americans started doing research in this area, because the dialogue that happened here was between the Americas and Europe when the center was going towards the US. So the research that happened in the US was the dominant canon, and all these countries that were interacting were out of the dialogue and out of the books. This only happened when important collections started buying this, and they started doing research. So if you go, for example, to the Cisneros collection, which is like the main collection of Latin American art, they own, I would say, like 60% of these kind of works, and those are the ones who actually started doing the research, but only started happening the actual research in Latin American art. at the end of the 90s or 2000 when the boom started. So this was the Salon de la Réalité Nouvelle, the Argentine Pavilion in Paris. And as I said, I mean, the interaction was out of the American canon. And this was, as I said, one of the highlights of Argentine art. There are two other moments that I'm going to present shortly, and they are the 68, the year 68, like everywhere else in Europe and the US, and then the year 2001. Those are like the three key things in Argentine art. And in order to understand also what, I mean, the history of Argentina, unfortunately, we had several dictators that shaped the way people think in Argentina. So we were on and off from dictator to dictator, and there were a few years that were a democracy, and those years were dominated by one main figure, Juan Domingo Perón, who maybe you heard about him. because of the Evita musical. So he was on and off, started as a democracy, but then became a populist, and then he was taken down by the military. So it was a whole, I would say, from the year 33 to the year 83, 50 years of dictators that shaped the way artists had to do shows, shaped the way that artists had to talk about what was going on. And so in the year 68, artists started working with conceptual art. There were a lot of links between artists, interaction between artists and workers. And this was one of the main shows. It's called Tucumán Arde. Tucumán is a location in the north of Argentina, and it means Tucumán is burning. So artists were working with workers that had a lot of problems with their salaries, and they had to, they were basically working for free. And they, this is the General Confederation of Labor, and they were denouncing the labor situation there, because nobody in Buenos Aires had heard about it. So they organized a traveling show that actually got closed by the dictators. This is another piece of conceptual art. Sorry about the caption. The artist is Oscar Boni, and it's called The Working Family. And it's a working family that he paid the same salary as if they were working, and he put them in a pedestal. For art goers, I mean, for the public to see. This is going to be in the MoMA this summer. And this kind of works. This was a happening that actually never happened. So it was announced in a magazine that this happening happened, but actually it's just a fake photo. And so all these kind of conceptual works that happened in 68 were not, I mean, they were known, but I mean, there were some interactions between Argentina and the US, but there were, for example, there was a show, I think it was in the year 90 something, that when they start, when they did the whole show at MoMA about conceptual art, but they avoided these works, even though they were aware of, because they messed up with the history that they have about conceptual art. Because conceptual art usually is traced from the US towards the outside, but there were things happening in other places. And one of them was Buenos Aires. And actually, I think it was Linda Nochlin who visited Buenos Aires and had the dialogue with the US, but somehow these kind of works were not displayed until now. Now they are being included in the history, finally. And then, as I mentioned before, the third moment of Argentine art history that we can do a highlight about is the year 2000. There was a very, I mean, we had a meltdown, an economic meltdown, and on December 19 and 20 of 2001, people took the streets, and we pretend to be very French, so it was like our French moment, and they ousted the president. So all the classes, everybody went out and to do a massive protest of 2 days outside until the president had to quit, finally. And you see like middle class, upper class, everybody finally united to protest. And it was chaotic. People lost their savings, and suddenly people from middle class ended up being totally poor because the banks held their money, and you couldn't get the same money that you had before. After the freeze, we got like a quarter of what we had. So it was really terrible for everybody. So things changed a lot, and suddenly, but people had to keep on going. So artists had to reinvent themselves because there was still obviously need to talk, to create. And one of the things, one of the figures that appeared during this moment was something that we didn't have before, was something that's called, someone that's called a cartonero, somebody that picks up garbage from the street, but it's only paper, sorry, not garbage, paper and cardboard, and they recycle it. So with these new figures, there was a group of artists who got together to create a publishing company, and they bought cardboard from them and started to publish books of authors that could not get published either. So a lot of these exchange groups began, and sort of like the economy reinvented itself in this way. So not only in the arts, of course, clothing designers started doing their own clothing and opening their own stores somehow, and it was very moving to see all this happening in a country that was doing somehow good, but it basically collapsed. And after that, I mean, there's cars that are still today very open because the expectations of families change, and that idea that the next generation is going to do better suddenly was shattered into pieces. And it's a reality that has changed the way people, I mean, the objectives that people have today. So this became a very popular model, and it was done in other places of Latin America, and somehow it became very popular, and people were even collecting books. So there were these like libraries that people were like, oh yes, I have this edition of this book and that book of this author, that it became like an elitist thing again. So things little by little became better. And obviously we have this thing in Argentina that we have one economic crisis after the other one. And we kind of like learn how to live with that in our minds. I think that since that living there, I think we had like at least 3 or 4 times that they froze our savings in the banks. So we sort of learned how to be like, ugh, okay. Money's gone, let's start all over again. This is what happened again, and people are kind of okay now. And the market is, in the art world, is very, it's small, but it moves. And the artists get to be artists again, and they're collectors, local collectors. Still, it's very, like most of the markets, there are a few artists that do great abroad, and then the rest of the artists move from gallery to gallery. But there is a good market. In fact, next week is our art fair in Buenos Aires. It's called Arte Va. And surprisingly, I was just telling Karin that it's not great for sales, but it's a big popular event. This was published in Art News on February 28th. And Arte Va actually is the third art fair in the world if you count attendance. So we have Art of Madrid and Art Miami as the most popular art fairs, but we are not far away from those. It's 77,000 people, as it says here, and it's massive. It runs from Tuesday to Monday. It's one of the longest art fairs in the world, and the public goes there. Not only to buy art, but also to see what's going on, what's happening. It's considered sort of like a biennial almost, because we're so far away from everything, as I mentioned at the beginning. Geographically, unless you have the means to travel, you don't see much, because it's not like being here in Europe that with a few euros you can move around and see other cultures. We are stuck at the bottom of it. So if you don't get the funds, it's one of the few places where you can actually see what's going on around the world. So a lot of people go there. I mean, it depends on which day you go, but I mean, Tuesday and Wednesday are obviously VIPs. But then over the weekend, you get a lot of people that actually pay for tickets. It's one of the few fairs that make money out of the sale tickets. And they ask. It's a few of the moments where people are not afraid of walking into a gallery and ask about the works. I have this conversation with many galleries that tell me, I'm exhausted because so many people ask me about this, but it's at the same time, it's part of the mission of this art fair is to educate the public, because people don't go to our galleries and ask about works, especially people, I mean, I'm talking about somebody that would never go to an art gallery, somebody that might go to movies but doesn't consider, doesn't even think about going to a museum or an art gallery. However, when Art Deval takes place, people buy a ticket just to see what's going on. So they don't mind asking. It's a moment where they are not afraid. And we'll see what happens this year, because in theory they are making this smaller and with a better programming. And there's also like a lot of seminars happening at the same time. It's very popular. I can tell you what happens next week. Then museums. We have a very strong history of museums. However, this has changed in the past, I would say from the 90s. A lot of private collections opened and reshape the way museums are thought and visited in Argentina as well. We had all the state museums, the national galleries, but with the 90s, a lot of people got rich very, very fast. And one of the museums that opened was this, the Malva. It's the Museum of Latin American Art of Buenos Aires. This is a private collector. His name is Constantini. And his collection was obviously so rich that it became a museum, and it has right now a Spanish curator is managing all the international programs, Agustín Pérez Rubio, and he's reshaping the way this museum is working also in Argentina. Shashoi Kusama show was there, Andy Warhol, I mean, main names are going to this museum. Even though it's Latin American, it's now hosting a lot of international shows. This is the National Museum of Fine Arts. It was a run-down institution until the past, I would say, 10 years. It's changing little by little. It was emptied by a corrupted director who was selling works on the side, and but they are recovering it little by little. And now the programming is a lot better. It's integrating the public. There's an artist that it's doing first Thursdays. There's like a lot of interaction between artists, contemporary artists, and the collection. It's open to the whole public. There's like a party, and they're trying to somehow bring public back, because what happened with all these new museums is that people will go to all these cool new places and they forgot about this like national museum. So they are trying to change that. This is a newly opened place. It's called Usina del Arte. I don't know how you say Usina in English. No idea. Sorry. And they are integrating visual arts. This opened last year. and visual arts with music and other art forms. This is another private museum, PROA. It's owned by the Tenaris Techin Group. They are a petroleum mega company all over the world, but they are owned by a couple of people from Argentina, and it's a Kunsthalle. So they hold, they, since they started, they have held, I would say, the best international shows that ever came to the city. They opened about 20 years ago, and it's expanding. It's in a neighborhood that I'm gonna show you in a short while. And they have great public programming, and it all comes from this super rich funding company, because they have the theory that their employees have to be enriched with culture, which is great. So they spend money on the, I mean, it's totally public anyway, but it's geared towards the employees of this company. And this is the other new center that opened 3 to 4 years ago. Faena, he's a building developer who's also opening a Faena Arts Center in Miami. It's on Collins and, you were there. It's on Collins and 30. It's like he's changing a whole district of Miami Beach. This is the interior, very like fancy. And this will be the last of the most important museums and art centers in Buenos Aires. Ciudad Conex, Conex City, it's the most like most alternative place where performances, like edgy performances, and all those that would not go to a museum will come here to find it. All the arts, it's music as well. There are concerts here, and they give a prize every year to an artist. So it's one, I mean, it's one of the key places to visit if you ever go to Buenos Aires. And then last but not least, the art galleries. It's a small, I mean, it's a circuit that it's small, but strong. They are divided in neighborhoods, and these neighborhoods basically define the style, I mean, the profile of the galleries. We have galleries that are just for decoration. They're mostly in Palermo, which is, you cannot see it, but you see like the big block up there, there's like the center, it says here, this is when everybody visits Buenos Aires, they go here to Palermo, this neighborhood, and they are, most of the tourists stay there, and that's where the galleries that have works that are visually attractive are. Then to the right of it, the little section is Barrio Norte, and downtown, which is more like historic art, like historic works are sold there. And then on the left is Villa Crespo, which is now the interesting section of Buenos Aires, where all the galleries that have international exposure are, the more cutting edge artists are showing, artists are moving there. And then the little one over there, La Boca, is like a lot of tourists go there as well. All the colorful houses are, but since it's like at the very end of the city, it's also very cheap to rent or to buy, and there are a couple of galleries that are opening there now, and artist studios, because it's a big spaces for almost no money. So I should have said this at the beginning, but since, I mean, my profile of career is not geared towards artists per se. When I was invited to do this presentation, I thought more about what's happening, like on like the bigger picture of Buenos Aires. So I thought about like all the structures that support the artists. So now that's why I've been presenting this. I should have said this at the beginning. Sorry. So now, going back to the galleries. So the galleries in Villa Crespo are the ones that are actually showing abroad. And these are the four key galleries in the city, and are the ones that, Ruth Ben-Zakkar has been there for over 30 years, and it's the gallery that goes to Art Basel and it has the best list of international artists. And then we have Nora Fish, who also is a growing gallery, more into the, I would say, smaller art fairs, like Untitled. She was showing at Untitled last year. She has a great list of artists more towards performance art. Then Sly Smooth is another new gallery that is doing great in big art fairs. This one, I'm not mentioning the artists, I'm sorry. This one is Diego Gravinese. He's an hyper-realist painter. And he's one of the artists that Sly Smooth is showing. And most of them have this profile of like 30-something, 40 years old artists who are very shocking and colorful to look at. I'm sorry. This one is Osias Yanov. He's in several collections in Argentina. His interest is performance and queer studies. And this one is Provisorio Permanente. It's a collective of artists. And one of them, I forgot the name. He was one of the artists that showed, where you had Freeze last, not this year, but the previous year, that was a soccer field outside.
Yeah.
In New York, yes.
Yeah.
He was the artist, and I will remember in a short while. I'm sorry? Yes. And I will remember the name shortly. And then Gatti Prieto specializes in photography. That you mentioned that your interest is photography. So this is the gallery that has mostly photography, and it's kind of growing little by little. So they're all very geographically very close, and they are the ones that are basically now dominating the market in Buenos Aires. Still, it's very hard for the artists to go abroad and be known. There's a problem that we were discussing today with Kadri that exists maybe here as well, is that collectors, I mean, it's a small market, even though it's a big country. We are like 35 million people, and Buenos Aires has like, I don't know, like 10 million people if you count like the everything around it. Still, the collectors collect local art. It's very, very few collectors are knowledgeable enough to go abroad. There are, of course, I would say 10 collectors that have international works. But then the rest, they want to buy whatever it's there, because it's easier to go to home and say, yeah, I know that, yes, I have that. So they stay within the market, but they jump the gallery. So they go directly to the artist. So it's very hard for the galleries to have a strong, a good market there, and it's very hard for the galleries to go out if they don't have that local market that supports them and then can go out. So it's a problem that also occurs in several cities in Latin America. So only the few smart galleries that get the collectors from abroad are doing really great. The other ones, the artists keep jumping from gallery to gallery, and they don't have, so the galleries are not worried about helping the artists build their careers, because they know that the collector is gonna go directly to the artist as soon as they turn their backs. So that's why I selected these four, because they are the only ones that I see that they are stable and growing and improving little by little. And so again, as even though we're a big country, we still have a small market for the arts. And that's one of the reasons also why I want to start creating these international dialogues, because I think that it's very important that we develop these dialogues, like the one that I was showing before between Europe and Buenos Aires and many other cities, because they do exist. It's just a matter of finding where the dialogue is important and make it and highlight it in an international context. Thank you.
Can you tell a little bit more about, like, you have had such a range of experiences from the public institutions to the fair.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what propelled you to go from one to the other, and where do you think you are at the moment?
Okay.
Like, how have you condensed all your experiences into this, I guess, this CPR platform that you're launching now?
So, I mean, I was never afraid of moving from one side to the other. There was, when you're studying at school, they always tell, I mean, at least at the universities that I went to, they kept on telling me, like, oh no, art galleries, or you will hear on the hallways, like, don't go to the commercial side. Like, art galleries are always, were always looked like down. And if galleries were looked down, art fairs were like the forbidden land. You couldn't go to the commercial side. But at the same time, I mean, I was not afraid of doing that. And I thought that there's a need for every single element in the art world. You need the artists to be creating. You need the galleries to represent the artists and take care of their professional and commercial career. You need the art fairs to sell and make connections to collectors so the galleries can develop their program. And yes, and then you need the other side. You need the non-commercial side. You need the research that is done in schools. You need the museums that show to the public what's happening. So, and I'm a very, how do you say, inquieta? Like, I like about everything in the art world. I am very curious. So I, when I was going to school, I mean, I was not, you mentioned at the beginning that I jumped, that I was doing art fairs and then I went to or the other way around. I was actually taking two classes at school and then doing research at maybe the Whitney and then also working for the art fair. So I like everything
time.
At the same time. So I was juggling like here and there. And what happens is that the art fairs, they pay me a salary. So I had, I mean, I was able to work in the art world and support myself while actually doing research that I also really like and also studying at school. So I was doing about everything. But I don't like doing research full time, for example. I really enjoy reading and learning and knowing the mission behind what the museum is looking to do. But I don't see myself doing that full time. I like the thrill that an art fair gives you. I like that moment when you're like about to open and you see that there's an explosion somewhere and you have to rush and fix it right before all the VIPs arrive. I like that as well. But I think I'm ready to do something else now. Like, I learned how that could be done. I learned how the art fairs are run. I learned research already in different scenarios, European or American. So now I think that it's time to give back what I learned. And it's time for, I mean, and I saw there's a need for curatorial research. And I always wanted to do something that was mine as well. So I think that all this combination, I mean, my experience in different areas gives me the possibility now, as I mentioned before during our meeting, of knowing who I can ask for money in order to get funding and do some academic research or help others do that academic research. But career-wise, I think it's very, I mean, it was very enriching to have all these different experiences. Because now I can say what I like and what I don't. I don't think that curators nowadays have to stick to one model, because you have curators that are very institutionalized, and that was the traditional model of the curators. But nowadays, I mean, I think it's an asset to have all these different experiences. I think it was very enriching, but and I think it's something that I want to give back, and that's why I thought about this project with Aura, because it's something that people should tell you? Because at the beginning of the career, I remember, I mean, listening to professors and advisors, like, do this, don't do that. No, try everything. And if you don't like it, you just throw it away and then start something else. But I think it's very important to try everything. I failed a million times, but I think it was totally worth it.
Yes. I have sort of against the question if you said that you don't live in Buenos Aires anymore, sort of like a foreign Argentinian now. But what would you say is Buenos Aires are today courageous in addressing important ideas in Argentina?
What are artists creating now?
No, yes. Are they as courageous as you would expect?
Well, right now it's a scenario very different from 2001. The scenario now we're a very politicized society. We're very dramatic about our governors and who is up there. So what's going on right now, it's obviously affecting the arts. And right now there is a polarity between who is with the president, Cristina Kirchner, a female president, and who is against it. So first of all, you have that division in the art world. Mostly artists are with the president and collectors are towards the right against the president. That's sort of like the bigger picture. And then you have artists that are beyond that and that are studying like in a more international realm. And you have artists that do not worry about the local scenario. And there you have interesting artists that are working on queer theory, like Adriana Minoliti, who showed at Independent Art Fair, and they are artists that are in their 30s that are starting to show abroad. You have, I can't remember this name of the artist, anyway, but they are very, you have a lot of artists that are very in international dialogue, they don't talk about the local scene. But then you have the local artists who are working there that have a very strong voice, and it's refreshing to see that they are involved with what's going on there. And but I think that these artists still need an international point of view a little bit. Because now it's different than all these years that we were talking about. Now we are in a globalized moment. So a lot of them are trying to go out or are trying to get into the international dialogue. So the scenario, I'm really looking forward to go there next week to see what happened this past year with the art world. There's a lot of research. We have a curatorial program there as well. It's very developed and engaging.
So what happens outside Buenos Aires? You talked mostly,
yes,
Buenos Aires art scene. But is there anything special in other cities, in other regions?
Yes, there is. There are a few major cities outside of Buenos Aires. But unfortunately, the dialogue that happens between those cities, it always goes to Buenos Aires. It's like what happened between the whole world and New York, it goes there. So, there are some, there's a group of female artists that have shown throughout Argentina. It's called Pintoras, and it means like painters, but with an A, which is a feminine. They have shown, this group has shown in different museums. They were sponsored by Andriani, which is like FedEx. So they were able to travel to distant places. But the market and most of the artists live in Buenos Aires. You have the second city where a lot of artists are is Rosario, but it's an hour and a half away from Buenos Aires. And it has a major museum and they have a lot of artists living there because it's a lot more affordable. But the problem is that it's not well connected. So whenever you want to have a market or whenever you want to have somebody criticize your work, you have to be in Buenos Aires. So unfortunately, yeah, it's very rare that artists show in other cities. We have Cordoba, it's a big city, Mendoza, Tucumán, that I've shown the protests there, the art show slash protest. So yes, it happens, but we rarely know about that. One of the goals of CPR is eventually go to one of another city on top of Buenos Aires when we do the South American tour next year, the South American program next year. So that will be something that we want to do. But I don't know what we're going to find. That's going to be a challenge because we have to see what really happens in those cities.